A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 274. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Chiller. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Chiller was an anthology of supernatural, chilling ghost stories, all in modern day settings. Done in 1995 on ITV, they did a total of 5 episodes, each about 50 minutes long. And the series was created by Lawrence Gordon Clark and Stephen Gallagher, a director and a writer who we have seen on a number of other shows.
Yes, absolutely. So, two, you know, trustworthy people in charge of this show. And as we discussed last time, an attempt for the ITV network perhaps to produce some modern ghost stories to rival some of the great ghost stories that were done in sort of period dramas of the past. We'll be talking about how successful that was, and we'll be talking about some other anthology series as we go along. But in our last episode, we covered the first 3 stories, so we've got to finish off with the last 2. Let's turn to the next story, which was called The Man Who Didn't Believe in Ghosts. So, as you can imagine from that title, this is about a professional skeptic, a popular author, who we see at the start on a television show explaining the sort of what he regards as the nonsense of ghost stories. But then he has an illness, he suffers a stroke and has to move with his family into a large country house where he's hoping to recuperate. He's going to be working on his book. But of course, any large country house in England or any part of the world, I guess, seems to come with a ghost story attached. But of course, our hero doesn't believe in that sort of thing at all. Or does he by the end of the episode?
Yes, indeed. This one was written by Anthony Horowitz, who we've come across before from Crime Traveler, but he's worked on Poirot, and he's very well known for creating a series called Foyle's War, a World War II set series that he created and wrote many of the episodes for, and did some excellent work on that. I also have to mention that he has done some recent work writing a new James Bond novel. So he has a bit of involvement in that franchise as well.
Yes, we like to mention a Bond connection, particularly if you are hooked on Bond, Brian.
Thank you for the plug for my other podcast. This one was directed by Bob Mahoney, although the DVD sleeve lists Rob Walker. That's actually incorrect. It was directed by Mahoney. And Peter Egan from The Perfect Spy features as Kramer. And we also have a spooky turn from Miles Anderson, who was in the original UK version of House of Cards, as the previous owner of the house, who sort of hangs around and does some odd jobs.
Yes, I mean, if you are the previous owner of a country house and you've fallen on hard times, I suppose you would stick around and do odd jobs for the family that now own it. But of course, that does seem slightly, you know, it is a slightly creepy janitor sort of situation. There isn't a Scooby-Doo ending, but or not as such. But yes, he does do a creepy turn for this one, I thought.
Yeah, he does give it a feel that's a little bit odd, which was quite nice.
And I should mention, as I say, at the start, the Kramer, the writer, has been interviewed on a television program about ghosts and skepticism. And he's been interviewed by none other than the British newsreader Angela Rippon, who appears to be playing herself, basically. And quite charming to see her in there, you know, famous for reading the news. And, of course, for her notorious performance on the Morecambe Wise Christmas show.
Yes, of course. Then we get to an episode called Number 6.
Yes, so this is a dark episode. It's the last of the five. It's a sort of serial killer police procedural with a ghostly or a paranormal twist. We have a detective called Jack Taylor racing to try and catch the killer of five children in the fictional town of Helsby. Each victim was killed at a full moon beneath an oak tree. And of course, there is a, you know, there's a certain pressure of time on him. And we get this strange feature of drawings by children at a local school of a figure they've possibly seen outside the school gates. Could this be the murderer? Could this be the clue to catching this serial killer? Can Jack Taylor track him down before he strikes again?
Yes, we have some strange stuff there, don't we? A child psychologist is trying to help out as well, as the clock is ticking down towards the full moon, which is quite significant in this particular story. This one was written by Anthony Horowitz again and directed by Rob Walker. So we have, again, some interesting writing in here.
Yes, I think Horowitz doing good work, actually, both with the last one and again with this sort of story number six. You know, perhaps the emphasis shifting away from those earlier stories that Stephen Gallagher was adapting. And now we get some new stories from Anthony Horowitz, who, as you say, Brian, he does great work on British television and also in novels.
Yes, absolutely. In this one, Kevin McNally from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies is there as Taylor. Maggie O'Neill, who we remember from Invasion Earth, is in there as his girlfriend and also, importantly, a teacher at Helsby School. When we also have Don Warrington as a character called Dr. Mayborn. Don Warrington had a memorable cameo in Red Dwarf at one point. He also is someone I remember quite a bit from playing Rassilon in the Big Finish Doctor Who audios a number of years ago. But he's had many roles on British TV and is always very interesting to watch and always memorable.
Yes, and he is, as we say, he's great as this sort of child psychologist who's also trying to crack the mystery and trying to interpret the children's drawings as they race against time. So it's good stuff. I guess, you know, in the 90s, if we had a police detective searching for a serial killer, there was usually a psychologist or a psychiatrist involved somewhere along the line as a sort of consultant to give them the extra advice they needed.
Yes, that's right.
So that's the five episodes we've covered. You know, as we say, dark stuff, particularly perhaps as we get to the latter half of the five. But what about the whole subject of horror anthology series on TV and what makes a good one? There have been several over the years. It's a subject that British and American TV, and I'm sure world television, has returned to many a time. Here on British Invaders, we have discussed Nigel Neill's Beasts in our episodes 45 and 46, which had at least two, if not three, truly great episodes of television horror, I thought.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, that was great stuff. We've covered Hammer's own attempt, Hammer's House of Horror from the 80s, back in our episodes 133 and 134. You know, there were some good moments in that. It's not one that I was completely convinced about, but there was some good stuff there.
It had a couple of strong episodes, and that was from 1980, and Beasts was from the 1970s. So there was a sort of strong vibe of these kinds of things from the 70s, I think.
Yes, that's right. I mean, you know, as I say, it's a popular recurring theme.
We have also covered a few productions from ITV's Mystery and Imagination series, which were sort of longer, what we would now consider TV movies, done as run during the 1960s. And quite a few of those are missing, but we have covered some of those individually. They did Frankenstein, which we covered in British Invaders 194 and 195, and Dracula, which we did in 220 and 221.
And they were fantastic. We really enjoyed those.
Yes, those were excellent black and white 1960s adaptations that were really very strong. We also looked at a show called Crooked House, which was created by Mark Gatiss. We looked at that in British Invaders 145 and 146, and that was a series of a few stories that were linked together with an overall theme and sort of an overall story that brings it together.
Yes, I just thought that was perhaps not quite the anthology series. It was more, it reminded me of the sort of portmanteau horror films from Amicus in the 60s. But it was, you know, it was a good show, Crooked House. We enjoyed that one.
Yeah, it was one overall story, but told in three different time periods in a way that gave it a bit of an anthology feel as well.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there was the Ghost Story for Christmas that ran for about 8 years in the 1970s and came back for a couple of years in the 2000s as well.
So that's the sort of anthology series that we've covered here so far on the podcast. But, of course, there's many others out there. So on our radar are shows like Dead of Night, which I know has got a couple of episodes which are particularly infamous for being very scary. There's a series called Armchair Thriller with, again, very memorable opening titles. And one that keeps getting recommended to us on Facebook and elsewhere is a scary children's anthology show called Shadows from ITV in the mid to late 70s, which is one I think we're going to have to get to eventually, Brian, because a lot of listeners out there do seem to regard that one quite highly.
Yes, that's right. I don't think we'll be doing that immediately, but we may well get to that.
Certainly it's on our list of possibles. And of course, there's perhaps the granddaddy of them all, the longest running anthology series, perhaps, is the 112 episodes of Tales of the Unexpected that ran from 79 to 1988. Obviously, originally based on Roald Dahl's short stories. Is it a horror series? I don't know. It's a series stories with a twist in the tale, I think, Brian. Some of them are comedic. Some of them are certainly supernatural.
Yes, interesting stuff. These things have definitely been covered a lot. I think horror is something, and spooky ghost story type things are things that work well as anthology series as opposed to continuing ongoing series.
Yes, so there is some still material out there for us to get to, and you know, wonder what makes the perfect horror anthology series, and perhaps our listeners can help us.
Yes, this would be a nice discussion to have on Facebook about which of the horror anthology series were the strongest and did the most interesting things. Which ones were your favorite?
Yeah, let us know. We will post a thread up on the Facebook group when this episode goes live and get involved. Who knows? You could win my copy of the Chiller DVD as a prize if you've got a particularly good suggestion for us.
Aha, very good.
So I guess we should get back to talking about Chiller itself. We've covered the five stories. Now it's time to actually reveal what we liked about the show and what we didn't like quite so much. How would you like to start us off, Brian?
Well, with this, I think I have to start with the performances, because there are really some stunning performances in this series, with people like John Sim and Martin Clunes. And even the less known people in here, like some of the actors in the first episode and so on, there were some very strong performances in here, and that really helped to bring it up a level.
Yes, it's an amazing cast that they've got. And of course, obviously, they featured them on the front cover of the DVD, along with that horrific screaming face from the titles. So, yeah, if you've got people like Nigel Havers and Sophie Ward, if you've got Phyllis Logan, Martin Clunes, Peter Egan, and all these other names we've been mentioned, and they're all doing great work. I couldn't think of any particular performances that bothered me at all in this show. You know, the episodes appear well directed, the actors appear well directed, and they're doing great stuff. I don't know if there was any particular performances that stood out for you as being really exceptional, or perhaps the best of the bunch.
That's a tough choice with this. The performance from John Sim was very good. That was one that...
That's the one.
Really, the episode hangs on him, and he pulls it off beautifully.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll be talking about John Sim much more next month, but, you know, what a great TV performer, always sort of magnetic and compelling and very, very watchable. And that is a sort of a startling performance in that middle episode of The Five. We've got a bunch of different writers and directors. Obviously, we've got Lawrence Gordon Clark, we've got Stephen Gallagher. I know you're particularly fond of Anthony Horowitz as a writer when he turns up for the last two episodes. Did you enjoy the writing on this show?
I thought the writing was very solid, actually. It does some interesting and unusual things some of the time, and other times it's a little bit more what you would expect from this type of show, but it's always solid and always feels quite engaging, as does the directing, I think.
And I liked the sort of outdoors, the location work. I liked the fact that it appeared to be, and in fact it is, you know, it's Northern England. The derelict church for the Mirror Man episode was very good, but so was the country house for the man who didn't believe in ghosts. I thought it looked good. And, you know, the fact that they took it on location, that it's not a London-centric show. I do like it when television in the UK gets out of London and looks more regional. So I enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yes, that was quite well done. It had a very nice sort of look to it, and it allowed the look to be a little different from episode to episode. The episode Toby, which also had very nice performances in it with Serena Gordon and Martin Clunes. This is the one with the concerns about an unborn child. And it has a much more sort of modern and wealthy kind of look to it than some of the others. But it works very well. And the intensity of the performances and what people are going through sort of plays against the sort of fancy houses and things, which is very nice. Again, it was something that was very well put together.
Yeah, great stuff. I mean, Serena Gordon as the mother in that episode, Toby, not a name that's perhaps as recognisable as the others, although I think you'd recognise the face of the actor. I know she's terrific in that, you know, that role. And it is quite, you know, challenging stuff. She has to portray this woman who appears to be haunted possibly by the spirit of her unborn baby. Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, we've just gone from acting to writing to directing and back again. And it all it's all very strong with this. It's very solid stuff.
Okay, so we perhaps have to turn from the positives to the negatives. Were there any elements of this show that were less successful for you, Brian? I've got a few, but what about yourself?
Well, there aren't a lot. It is, to a certain extent, it does what it says on the tin. You know, it's the anthology horror series, similar to kinds of things that were being done in the 1970s. And it doesn't stray very, very far from that. It maybe at times stays a little bit too much in the expected, predictable territory.
Okay. I wondered about the time slot. I wondered about the hour, which, you know, equates to about 50-minute running time on a commercial channel. But it did feel to me as if the episodes were a little bit sluggish. And the comparison I made was that when Lawrence Gordon Clark did the ghost stories for Christmas on the Beeb, most of those were about 30 to 40 minutes long. And I just wonder if the time had been brought down to perhaps 45 minutes for these episodes, whether the stories would have been a bit sort of punchier and a bit more compelling for me. But of course, 45 minutes is a slightly difficult time slot for television. I think they were still very much in the sort of, you know, 30 minutes or an hour mode at the time.
Yeah, I thought the running time for these worked pretty well, but certainly other things might have brought something interesting to it too.
Yes, I think, as you know, regular listeners will perhaps be familiar with for us here on British Invaders that I have a slightly shorter attention span than you do, Brian. Sometimes I wander off after about 45 minutes.
Well, I do sometimes enjoy things that are done at a slightly slower pacing rather than the things that rip straight through. I think in some cases you lose something by not having that little bit of space there.
Okay, interesting. I don't know if there's anything else that you wanted to mention in the sort of pluses and minuses before we move on to recommendations.
I don't think so. I think we've covered this pretty well.
We perhaps should, as I say, shout out for the very chilling, appropriately, title sequence, which I thought was truly nightmarish and very well done.
Yeah, that was very nice for sure. And it was nice to have a title sequence that is not particularly connected to any of the individual episodes. It just stands on its own thematically, which is nice.
Yeah. That perhaps, you know, that, you know, when I give up the doctrine, that will be my dream job, just coming up with horrific title sequences for TV anthology series.
Ah, very good. So let's get into our recommendations. Do you want to start with this one, Eamon?
Ooh, tricky. I had problems with Chiller. I really, really wanted to enjoy this series because, you know, it sounds like right up my street, modern ghost stories, spooky and chilling. But I found it rather hard work in a way. And I thought, you know, there was a slight problem with the 50-minute running time. I did think that towards the end of the series that it started to, you know, get better for me, and particularly the last story, number 6, which is perhaps the darkest of the bunch, but it is perhaps I also found the most compelling. Maybe it's that sort of race against time bit that sort of caught me up in it. But for me, I suppose it's a cautious one. It is reasonably priced at $8.99 over here in Region 2. So it's a cautious sort of thumb in the middle to up for me on British Invaders. I've got a feeling that you're going to be slightly more positive about this one than me, Brian.
Well, I think I will. This is a pretty strong series. It's not going to be one of my unbridled, enthusiastic recommendations. But I will say that if you enjoy anthology horror, this show does a good job at it, and it's worth getting. And it's very much a matter of taste. Would I have gone to this on my own? Probably not, because I don't usually go to anthology horror. But I think this does that well. So if you have an interest in that kind of thing, then it's worthwhile picking this one up.
Okay. It is a sort of bundle on the DVDs. You get the 5 episodes or nothing in a way. And it's a pity that they're not available individually streaming. But if you were to pick out one episode of the 5 to recommend to people, to our listeners, would you have a favorite, Brian?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think I will say Toby, the one with the unborn child. Although I'm split almost 3 ways, because I really liked Mirror Man with John Sim, and then number 6 was also very good. So, yeah, that's a tough call.
Okay. I mean, it's an interesting one. I didn't think you were going to go for Toby. But yes, okay, some great performances in that, Toby and Mirror Man and number 6. But, you know, as ever, if you've seen this show, if you remember it from 1995, do come along on the Facebook group and tell us, or perhaps recommend some other horror anthology series that we should be putting on our list of possible shows, Brian.
Absolutely. So, in summary, Chiller was an anthology horror series from 1995, which brought back some of the elements from the wonderful 1970s horror shows and horror anthology shows that we remember. It had separate stories with different ideas in each one, with a number of well-known cast members and some very interesting people doing the performances, as well as in the writing and directing chairs.
Great stuff. And do come back next time, because we're sticking with John Sim, as we hinted, and we're going to a show that certainly was critically acclaimed. The interesting police procedural, in a way, with an unusual twist, Life on Mars, from the BBC in 2006 and a second series in 2007. And there's quite a bit to discuss on that one, Brian, when we come back.
Yes, that's right. And that's something we've been eyeing as a possibility and discussing pretty much since the beginning of British Invaders, which is around the time that it actually aired. So we ended up deciding to wait a decade.
But we're getting to it eventually.
Absolutely. But until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. All of our past episodes, including the various horror things that we mentioned, are available there. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group and join the conversations about horror anthology series and a wide variety of British science fiction and television topics.
And come along to the Voice of Geeks network for streaming shows on all kinds of geek themes, including, yes, you guessed it, British Invaders. We are proud members at VogNetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, as always, thank you for your company. And it's Eamon in England also signing off. Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand, for this is Chiller.